Now we move on to our next item, which is the Ofsted and the SEND inspection. Over to you, Councillor.
Chair, just before I actually, my apologies to that part of the meeting. I must go to my apologies as well.
Right. Thank you, Councillor.
Thanks, I respect all the presentations. I'm conscious of time and I know that there's been a lot of presentations this evening, so I'll try and move through swiftly. I'm hoping that everyone's had the opportunity to have slides and also to read please the outcome letter from the Ofsted report. So, so just to go through the background information and to set the context of what is actually a really good use story for the island and part of the island's development, both its school system going in and obviously referring to the information that Andy's been sharing with us about fullness. So it was, the purpose of inspection was to judge how effectively the local area has implemented the SEND reform. So from the journey, really from 2014, when the framework for special education needs changed with the introduction of the Children and Families Act. So it was a local area inspection, so it wasn't focused on education, it was an integration of health, education, health and care, and looking at how well the whole of the island system supported children and young people from birth to 25 who've got special education needs and disability. So we were inspected over a week. Actually, it was a two-week process because there's an awful lot of work that actually goes in preparation. There was a scrutiny of evidence, a large number of meetings, up to about 20 meetings, and also visits to provision and going out into the local community to talk to parents and providers, really to triangulate what local officers and what everyone else was saying about how well the system actually works. So it involved about 150 people, including young people. I think what the inspectors really wanted to do was to hear the voice of children, young people, and providers to feedback, to set alongside the information that they were receiving from officers and obviously from the councillors. Three areas: how well do we identify needs, how well do we assess and meet the needs of children and young people with special education needs and disability, and how well do we improve outcomes. The findings were communicated in a letter which you've got in your pack, and the we've subsequently, I think really importantly, had a workshop to talk about the findings from the inspection, actually to bring everyone together and say, well, actually, this is what it said is telling us, and actually now what we're going to do about it and to formulate that action plan. It's all right being inspected and actually having the information and hearing that there is some really good things happening, but actually the most important thing is how we respond to that and how we continue to drive forward improvement for the children with special education disability on the island. So, just to reiterate, it was a really positive outcome. There were many areas of strength identified and very few areas for development. We didn't receive a written statement of action. Over 50% of local authorities have received a written statement of action, and I think that's a really good outcome in saying actually this is how well the system and how well the leaders are working together to drive through that improvement to make you see that coming through. The main findings were that children and young people with special education needs and disability were receiving an improving deal than the otherwise. So they were looking at all those indicators, and that was the school system, the outcomes for children with education, healthcare plans, those in school support, the social care outcomes, and health outcomes for the island. Leaders were working well together and have a good understanding of the needs of children and young people with special education needs on the island. They were very impressed that actually everybody understood the context of the island and they were able to articulate what the areas of development were. So they highlighted that it would, we know ourselves well, we told them that we knew ourselves well, and actually they found that they supported our self-evaluation and said actually yes, what we're identifying as the areas of development are those areas that we believe we're finding when we go out and actually talk to people. That there's an improving school system, obviously you heard from Jen and Eric today, that yes, that's reality. And the vulnerable children and young people with special education needs and disability are supported well. So that links into what CAFN's doing around the early help offer and supporting vulnerable children across the island. So the main areas of development they felt were communication of strategic direction. So in other words, we knew what we were doing, but actually sometimes that wasn't communicated beyond the officers who had their heads down and were actually getting on with things. But actually what we needed to do was to share what we were doing. I think a really good example of that came out through the speech and language therapy offer, that there was a really good speech and language therapy offer that was working particularly out in school's therapy service. And actually what the parents didn't know that was actually happening, how well that was improving outcomes. So it's about communicating what we're actually doing out to parents and carers across the island. Co-production with parents and carers and children and young people at all levels. Whilst they could see green shoots of us working in partnership with children, families and young people, actually what they wanted to see was that every single development that we do in all our areas of education, health and social care are developed with parents right at the very beginning of the start of the project. That's the spirit of the 2014 report forms, and that's what they wanted to see happening. Whilst they could see that was happening in some areas, and they had good examples, they wanted it to be embedded in all of the work that we were doing. Education, health and care plans, they said that they were good and good quality, but we weren't always updating the information following annual reviews, and that we needed to be improved specificity of targets and outcomes, particularly for health and social care. So, in terms of identification, this is just going through the three key areas. The strengths were strong early identification and support in the early years. They were really impressed by the early years way of working. They were very impressed with everything that was happening for children and young people and how integrated that was across education, health and social care. They felt that the early help offer was strong. They highlighted, obviously, the improving school offer. They could see that while some children and young people had not had a great start in terms of their education, that was really improving and it was starting to impact on outcomes. There was joint working, supporting early identification, increasingly effective support for children and young people who might have autism spectrum disorder. Obviously, we're aware that we've had some areas of concern, particularly with my health colleagues have been working very hard to improve that offer, and that was borne out by the inspection outcome. And well-informed education and health and care plans, what they said was that all the information we brought together to carry out a needs assessment of the children and young person was really working well. So areas of development, I've already highlighted those. They put them in the report, co-production, parents, carers and children, young people was a routine. And the older education healthcare has been always checked up to date. But what they found was that didn't mean that they weren't supported. The children in our schools were receiving a really good deal. The schools knew the children well, the SEN service was supporting the schools, and it was just the paperwork actually that we had to actually follow through. So what they suggested that we did was to develop an engagement strategy to ensure that all opportunities are maximised for parents, carers and children and people to be involved in developing set related strategies and policies. And we agreed with that, that it is that was a really good thing that we should be doing. To to ensure that information is disseminated to parents and carers and children and young people and other professionals about the work that's going on across the board to support children and young people with special education disabilities. And again, we agree with that actually hearing from parents and carers that they didn't know what was actually happening was actually, oh my goodness, we think, we know that this is happening and we're doing this, but you don't know about it, and that does need to be improved. To introduce that as co-production as a key performance indicator in all our strategies, and to review our processes for education, healthcare plans, and your review updates. So, assessing needs, strengths, they found that babies with lifelong disability were supported well by education, health, and care. So, that was related to the good early years practice that we've got happening out in the community. That early years settings support children well, and training is a strong feature. They really liked the hot topic sessions, which were run in family centres, which were supporting families with the issues that they'd really identified as being important to them. And they were finding support by accessing those sessions. That there was a good range of short breaks. Most education leaders work closely with other area leaders, and that strength within the education system that's facilitated, and you heard by the information that David Perry provided, is really well valued. Vulnerable children, young people with special education needs and disability are well supported. There's a good speech and language therapy offer, and that is run jointly by the NHS and the local authority. That children and young people have good access to a wide range of emotional mental health services. They were really impressed by the way that those services, supported by health and education, were working together to support children with CMH needs. That most parents were happy with their current support their child receives in school. That was a really good message for to come out through the inspection. And that education and healthcare plans were providing sufficient detail to enable children and young people's needs to be met.
Good. Can I stop you there? I do, on page E4, all the AGPs and other wish kept up to date.
Yeah.
This does not mean children not receiving the support they need. And then on page 5, the aging plans are providing sufficient detail. Well, if they're not up to date, how can you be sure that the children are receiving the help that they need? Because children grow up and circumstances change.
Yeah. It was more about the actual paperwork. It was more just about the paperwork that wasn't following through. So they'd been continuous, so within school, we'd been using the education health and care plan. There had been a continuous assessment through the plan due review cycle, and professionals had also been providing updated information. But the issue was that wasn't always just reported on the system. So what they were looking at was the records that we hold centrally within the team, and then they matched it to what was actually happening out in the school. So whilst the school had sent the paperwork into the service, we hadn't yet updated it and sent the revised information out. So it's a very good point, and you're right to pick it up.
Okay.
Yeah. It's also referring to on page 5, the plans that are now being written do meet the needs. So the old plans had evolved into meeting needs, but the paperwork of the old plans was not updated to affect the support of the beginning school. So the page 5 refers to the newer ones,
yeah.
The support refers to the old ones.
Okay, sorry.
It was an issue that we actually highlighted to the inspectors. What we didn't want to do was to hide anything that we were working on. And so we had a plan in place before the inspection to actually update all the annual reviews, and we made them aware of that. So they pushed it back to us quite rapidly, but we had already highlighted it as an area. So areas for development, the inspectors highlighted transition, particularly this was around health. So the transition from children's healthcare services into adult healthcare services. What they wanted to see that wasn't coordinated, and they wanted to see that system, that continuum of provision improved. There was a difference in thresholds, particularly from adult to from children's to adult care. So they wanted to see that threshold work through and a joint approach to that between the services improved. What they said about joint commissioning was that they could see the strategy, they could see that we were working on joint commissioning, but they felt that we were slow to plan that and to deliver services in a joint up way, but they could see progress being made. And they felt that some carers for children and young people with special education needs to disability lack confidence into the system, and they weren't well informed about services and had that support for their children works, which I think was one of the issues that was highlighted overall. So what they suggested we did was that we considered a transition coordinator role split across education, health and care, and that was linked to joint commissioning. They suggested that we updated the guidance for parents so that they can know what to expect to receive when their child has special education needs, and that they that we clarified what the SEN support in school actually was, and we actually have that in train, and we're actually working on that, and there will be updated guidance. And the banding project refers to the way that we actually fund children with education, health and care plans, and they see that we have plans to change that way and to move away from one-to-one support being a criteria, so that the schools could be more flexible in their approaches to delivering SEN support. They felt that we should clarify our decision-making processes on the level offer, that we should monitor the quality of implementation of education, health and care plans in schools, and that transition partnership agreements should be supported by across all transition phases, not just in early years. So that what they saw was a good transition plan for early years into primary, but what they wanted to see was that you rolled that out from primary to secondary and secondary to post 16, which again is, you know, it's a very good suggestion on what we already did.
I have another sort of query question here. I have been led to believe, and I think Sean Arnold will back me up, that the EHCPs are not, don't follow the child, and that in some cases, I have no idea how many, that when a child moves to school, either within the age group or moves to secondary school, the EHCP doesn't go with them. But there is a real gap. Now, I've spoken to somebody on the mainland, and they told me that it's similar over there, that the schools have their own system, and that these plans don't go with the child. Now, if you have a medical record and you change doctors, the file automatically goes across. And it doesn't happen with these plans. I don't understand why.
So I can clarify that, because that was one of the questions that you raised on it. So the education, health and care power is a legal document, and it absolutely transfers with the child into the new school. What we have to do is that every phase transfer, we have to review that plan, and we have to update it. It's a statutory process. And by the 15th of February, for year six children transferring to year seven, we have to update that plan, and then a copy of that plan is sent to the receiving secondary school. And the same happens at year 11 when a young person transfers into college or into the sixth form. We have to update the plan, and that plan has to go to that setting. So it's a legal requirement that we do that, and you do 100% of all plans are finalised by the 15th of February and by the 31st of March deadline for the post 16 transfer.
That's not what I'm led to believe. Sean, would you like to come in on this?
My son's got the ACP.
So is your mic on. Pop your mic on. Sorry.
My son's got the ACP, so I'm one of the ones who are battling the actual more than mine, because it is a battle. There don't seem to be, there's no transition period, like if you had a medical illness, transition, so things which the primary school would know about a child isn't passed on, even though this document may list the thing that there's things missing here to come up today. Secondary schools are involved with making the new EXCP, which is the transition override. You just, the primary school fills it in, trying to anticipate what they might need in secondary school, not talking to the secondary school centres or whatever, you know, what kind of they can talk together. There's no handover, there's no transition.
So my response is to that is that there should be. So I think the education, health and care plan is an assessment of a child or a young person's needs, and provision in section F should outline the provision that that child or young person needs in order to access education. I can't comment on individual individual cases, obviously, because I don't know. I mean, Ireland's got thousands of their two plans, so I don't know each of the cases individually, but it should have all the right information for the to meet your child's needs at the time when that plan is written, and it should be updated for secondary transfer. If it's not, then that's obviously an issue, because that's not what should happen.
It was only an observation. I wasn't aiming at my child.
No, that's fine.
Carried on. It's like the first person they asked to come in the bus, go and come travel the bus.
Okay. I think it would be helpful to look at this specific instance, because if what you're articulating is the case, then that's we've got something wrong, I would say. But it is a legal requirement that we update it and that information is transferred to the secondary school. Transition partnership arrangement would, I think, pick up on those issues of transfer, because actually if we complete a transition partnership agreement, then the secondary school and the primary school are involved in that, and they would co-construct that transition partnership agreement together. And it's something that the education side would be still working on. So the improving outcome strengths, that most children and young people with special education needs were happy and they felt that they were making progress. A comment was that now school is more interesting, behaviour and attendance has improved. The academic results, although they're below average, they are steadily improving. Outcomes for older young people are strong. They're well supported to access a good range of vocational courses that closely match the employment opportunities, I think, and this presentation is all that out this evening. The outcomes for vulnerable children, young people with STEM are improving, and that's the combined efforts of schools and virtual school. Obviously, we've got the post-16 team and the virtual college. There's good attendance, absence is reducing, and it's lower than the national. Again, the information from Karen, you've heard that this evening. That leaders in the area work closely and cooperatively with special education needs and disability information advice and support service to improve the vision for young people. There were some areas for development, that the targets in education, health and care plans are not always clear enough to support the child young person. That was mainly around health and social care targets and the link between health plans and social care. Exclusion rates are decreasing, but they're still too high. That educational attainment for children and young people with special educational disability, although they're getting better, they still need to continue to improve. And we've heard from David and Eric today about how they're continuing to drive that improvement. And some parents choose to educate their children at home as they don't feel the right provision is available. But the packages are improving the situation, but there's still work to do around a sufficiency strategy and getting our range of provision, particularly specialist provision on the island, better. So what they suggested that we did was to, we have launched this week what we're calling our Education Health and Care Needs Hub, where we are going to look at bringing that all together into an electronic system, and actually that will help us to improve the specificity around our targets. that we share the practice of writing targets, that we grow our alternative provision offer, and that we work on person-centred approaches, all of which we support in our action plan.
May I, before you go on, EOTAS, do the rest of you know what that means? I actually looked it up, education other than at school, but I couldn't find HIEP. H-I-E-P.
I'll feed that to Brian, it's not to use that acronym.
I'm not sure about education psychology.
The P course is out.
Sorry. No, as I said, I've no idea. Anybody else know? HIEP.
Yes, she just said it.
Yes.
Educational psychology.
But if you put a W in there, I might have.
Sorry.
Thank you.
So the next steps, the feasibility of the actions to be assessed, to draw up the action plan from our session, and then obviously that will be ratified and followed by the Senate board. But and we're not expecting the return from Ofsted, we're really delighted to report. Sorry, that was a whistle. A whisperoon, I'm conscious of being blowing the
On the last slide, next steps, there are no timescales on there.
No, with the action plan that we'll present, we'll have timescales. So we had a session in February, we brought all the information together, and the action plan is being written up, slightly knocked off course because we have the Hampshire Ofsted this
year. So
we're anticipating that over the next 3 weeks that we'll have the action plan, and that can be shared then with the Senate board.
Right. That's fine. Questions? Yes, I mean, if you sent us or sent the action plan to the security officer, he will circulate it to us, and then at least we will have it.
Would you want the answer to the question circulated as well?
Yes, that would be helpful.
That would be fine.
Yeah. All right.
Councillors have in front of them the actual Ofsted report, the letter which was sent to Steve Crocker. Is there anything else in there that anybody else wanted to raise? Now is the time. I think one thing. I was going to say back up the same goes, but in fact it was part of the thing that you're going to let us know anyway. I think that's my biggest query. Anybody else? Anything else? No, right. Thank you for that.